Welcome to the fifth episode of Jamal Belgi South Africa Recaps from Reality TV Warriors. My name is Michael Hamstone, and joining me as always is the Canadian who would never shoot a loved one for 500 euros because he's not called Michelle Pierce Denovan, Logan Saunders.
Good evening.
Good evening. We are over halfway through the season now, rattling through.
Yeah, we don't have too much further to go, just three rounds of play after this.
Yeah, it's ironic for me to say this because we're, at the moment, I think, recording an average of one a week.
Except for right now where it's back-to-back nights.
Yeah, we've managed to do our new personal best of two this week. I'm proud of us.
I think we hit three one week for Argentina when we did the Argentina season a few months ago.
We did four, including the Greece recap that week as well.
Holy crap.
But yeah, we are over halfway through the season, and I would say the executions start getting a bit devastating by this point.
It's not devastating this episode.
No, the next one is. The next one's is definitely devastating.
This week was the least amount of emotion I've seen from a cast after a player is executed, ever, possibly.
It's the anti-Jessica boot.
Yes, from the player who was eliminated, as well as the contestants reflecting on the elimination, there's no real emotion here.
Yeah, I mean, we can say that it's Hans. I'm going to just start with this question. Do you think that anyone ever suspected Hans?
No. Maybe Bertrand did.
Probably, but going back to what I said in episode two, I'm not sure that this twist was fair, purely because it let everyone know that Hans was never going to be the mole. If Hans had got to the final three, it would have been basically an unfair advantage for the one other person who wasn't the mole.
So would you say initially Hans had a huge advantage at the beginning of the game, and then the further he gets into the season, the more and more it tilts into the opposition's favor?
I would say so, yeah, because there was no way in hell that Hans wasn't getting back in the game, given that, let's be honest, Jessica scored zero and he got four yokers, I think it was. But I would say the longer he's there, the bigger advantage he's just giving to everyone else. Which I guess does make it a fair twist, it's just not really fair for Hans.
Yes, like he goes home initially in 11th place, fair and square, and then he gets a huge bonus by being thrust back into the game after essentially being eliminated, and then he has to play with the disadvantage because he's already gone home once while everyone else has gone home zero times.
Yeah, I think it's very telling that this is the last season where they do a twist where it's a non-elimination potentially at the start of the season.
Yes, and the fact that he didn't even have to really compete, he wasn't even there for when Jessica went home, so he got to skip around.
Yeah. This is the very last time that Belgium will do anything like this in terms of a twist, because you had Ruth last season with the car bomb that could potentially prevent her getting executed. You had Hans coming back after being executed. Then you have Yoka on the run in Mexico. Then it is, well, the big twist is the fact that the mole knows nothing for Vietnam. And then Greece was Pandora's box. They never have a potential non-elimination twist again. At least not in the seasons that have aired yet.
I'm in the process of killing this huge moth in my room. Give me one second.
No problem.
Wow, that was surprisingly easy.
We'll just pause the podcast, don't worry.
Hang on. Where the hell did he go? I thought I got him.
Just for the record, this is 100% staying in the episode.
Yeah, there's like this huge moth where I was about to start to teach, and this was like a little over an hour ago, and it flew straight from my eye. It hit around my eye. And then it just landed on, like, my discarded hoodie that I wear for teaching. And now, where the hell did it go?
Weirdly, I was about to get in bed a couple of days ago, and a moth was hiding under my Kindle and scared the living bejesus out of me.
Can you just download anything on Kindle for books? And, like, can you get, like, foreign languages on Kindle for free?
I think you pretty much can in the UK one. I'm not sure about Canada.
Yeah, because I was thinking about getting a Kindle. I thought it'd be a good thing for me to have.
You can send any PDF to a Kindle via email, so you know, even if you just find the free PDF, you can send it to your Kindle.
So next season of Belgian Mole, we can, thanks to Kindle, we won't even need subtitles.
Yeah, this episode is sponsored by Kindle, in case you haven't guessed.
Use the promo code RTVWarriors to get 15% off your Kindle purchase.
And don't forget to smash that like button. We're just going like full YouTuber now. So, previously the final seven cycled for their supper before searching for letters protected by ostriches, whilst failing to beat Gilles in a game of Scrabble. Hans found the golden egg, giving him the chance to steal money from the group, but it was a hole-in-one for the other six, who added the 3,000 euros to the pot. At the execution, lightning struck twice for Bertrand, as he couldn't save himself for a second time, and went home. And we begin with six people: Davy's girlfriend Margot, Hans's girlfriend Corinne, Elaine's brother Max, Robin's wife Sophie, Annalise's husband Joe, and Sam's unnamed mother, arriving at George Airport in the south of South Africa. They discuss that one of their loved ones is the saboteur in the group. Maxime says that the first thing he'll ask is whether he needs to put effort in or not, and they are driven to and then locked in a cage, just as if they were related to Michelle Pierce-Denovan.
Yeah. My family's here. Let's put them in a cage with a smoke bomb.
Well, the best thing about this is, I've checked through the entire episode, we never find out Sam's mum's name. They never say it on screen.
Do you think she was trying to have some sort of anonymity? Anonymity?
Anonymity. I'm not sure if she was trying to stay anonymous.
She was going to stay unanimous?
Yeah, I don't know why they never said her name. I don't think they said it actually in the episode. They certainly didn't put it on screen, because I went through the episode about two or three times on high speed just to make sure I didn't miss it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they didn't say her name. Maybe it's Mary. And then if they said it three times, something would appear in the cage.
Maybe it's Candyman.
Candyman?
Or Beetlejuice.
Yeah, Beetlejuice, yes.
And we open for real on day 11, with Gilles greeting them at breakfast, looking for two contestants with a good sense of direction. And they pretty quickly actually volunteer Hans and Davy. And he says that he hopes the other four can take a beating.
Hans has a really good sense of direction in the eyes of the other contestants, since he figures out how to fly back home to Belgium.
And Annalise, Aline, Robin and Sam are blindfolded and taken to a location 60 kilometres away from the hotel. They take the blindfolds off in the middle of a circle of poles, each of which has a word on, and a platform with a light bulb in the middle. All they've got to do is match 10 descriptions with the word in Afrikaans, which is made up of two of the compound words on the poles. They have to link the words using a human chain. If they're correct, they'll earn 300 euros. However, if they're not, they will be electric shocked because the poles are hooked up to a car battery. And I'm not even joking. They only get one chance to form each word. To earn the money for the pot, though, Davy and Hans have to reach them within 90 minutes. And this is another challenge where Gilles is just a little bit of a dick to people. Because as he's saying goodbye to Davy and Hans, he goes, I've already put the destination in the GPS for you. What he doesn't say is that he's put it into one of eight GPSs, all of which are in a different language, all of which will speak at the same time.
Just seeing the visual expression on Davy's face as he's trying to distinguish between each of the eight GPSs is quite amusing.
This is, I think, the first episode where we really get a sense that Davy is quite hilarious. Because his expressions during this car ride are divine.
I don't know which was worse for him, the eight GPSs or having pawns in the passenger seat.
There's one point where he just looks utterly perplexed when he realizes all eight GPSs are just going to start speaking at the same time.
And the thing is, he's proven himself to be like the strongest competitor for the team to get money and challenges, to the point that when everyone else has access to the dictionaries and trying to figure things out, that they want Davy to help them figure out the compound words in Afrikaans. And Davy's like, I'm on the highway. I can't focus on three or four languages of GPS while I'm driving and you guys trying to get me to process Afrikaans at the same time while speaking in Flemish.
Yeah, the thing is, it's an interesting experience being on South African roads at the best of times. With eight different languages screaming directions at you, it's going to be a little bit deafening for him and a little bit distracting. And the seven wrong GPSs also lead to a wrong destination. So they have to work out which one the correct one is and go to the correct place within 90 minutes, which is much more difficult than you would anticipate.
Yeah, one of them leads to the middle of Soweto.
So the first word is the Afrikaans for hole punch, and they are correct and can head to the library down the corridor. The light will turn on for 3 minutes, and there are 7 dictionaries hidden in the library. Each dictionary matches to the language of one GPS, leaving just the correct one for Hans and Davy to follow. Now, how would you have approached this? Because let's be honest, you wouldn't have been in the car, given you can't drive.
I probably would have been the guy in the passenger seat.
Yeah, you probably would have, actually. But thinking about this strategically, and given what we said in last week's episode about these people just do not make a plan, how would you have made a plan for this one?
Well, I mean, Afrikaans and Flemish has quite a bit of overlap, if I'm not mistaken. I think I had this conversation with a Dutch guy when I was in Cape Town, where there's a fair amount of mutual intelligibility. So I think you could figure out how compound words are constructed in Afrikaans if you're somebody who lives in Flanders.
Yeah, it took them far too long to realize that the correct tactic, I think, with the dictionary bit at least, is give them all the words for left, right, straight on, turn around, everything that they need, so that they can actually start working out the languages of the GPSs whilst you're getting electric shocked.
Yes, and then with the dictionaries too, yeah, you just, it's like, what are the, you know, what phrases do you always hear when you're driving a GPS? As you said, left, right, turn around, and maybe the like 100 meters, 200 meters, 300 meters, because that's what a GPS always counts down to as you're about to make a turn.
Yeah, even something like airport wasn't a terrible suggestion, because if you know there's an airport in the area, which there is, because it's the George Airport, and you know you're probably going to be going past it, then maybe you ask for the airport word, and it gives you one of the GPSs. It is honestly a miracle that they did well in this challenge.
Yes, I was thinking that too when Davy and Hans turn around the corner, and because they just play the odds, right? Like they get, or Davy plays the odds, where it's like, well, whatever places are over 30 minutes away from us, let's just turn those ones off. Not even really worrying about the languages. Because what if it was just one of the GPSs that was over 30 minutes away when they got down to 30 minutes? Then the rest of the challenge was just completely pointless for them, no matter what they did.
Yeah, the thing is, I wouldn't have necessarily turned off the ones above 30 minutes, because depending on how fast you drive, you could probably get there in less than 30 minutes.
Yeah, they don't enforce too many rules on South African roads, if I remember correctly.
No. It's not as lawless as Texan roads, but it's not far. So Robin rings them and says they need to pass on a word that they can look up in the dictionaries. Davy sets off and a cacophony begins.
Yeah.
And the second word is sponge cake, which they are right about. And they have Czech, Swedish, Indonesian, Turkish, Croatian, Danish and Norwegian dictionaries. And the third word is scooter. They say it's noise car and it's actually noise pony. And the electric shock is much larger than you think because it is a car battery.
And the collective, like, as they get further into the challenge, the way that they keep lifting their fingers off of the battery when they think the shock is coming.
Annalise is my absolute favorite in this challenge, I'll be honest. Annalise is so funny every time because she does not enjoy getting shocked.
No, there's loud groans. It's like a... Ah!
Between Annalise and Sam, we get such hilarious reactions to getting a pretty large electric shock.
They'll turn into Blanka from Street Fighter in no time.
So the fourth word is hitchhiking. They say it's raised thumb and it's thumb throw.
Yeah, thumb thrower. Sounds like an epithet or something.
Sounds like one of the name of the blue movies you got in your collection.
Yeah, thumb thrower. You're a real thumb thrower.
The fifth word is chameleon. They say it's colour-changing tongue. It's actually colour-changing man. And then Hans and Davy just get bored and decide to gamble and turn left.
I like that's how they win the money. You want to go left? Sure.
Sure, we've got a 50-50 chance.
I mean, in theory, I mean, of course it worked in hindsight. It's like, it makes them look like geniuses. But it's like, I guess they had to narrow it somehow and just be like, okay, let's just, if we try to focus on everything, we're going to have zero shot at this. But if we are just careful and only focus on 3 or 4 GPSs and just bank on one of those being right, then we have a shot at winning this challenge. So instead of saying like a 0% chance of winning, if you focus on all 8, maybe if you're able to just be like, okay, let's just pretend like one of these 4 has to be right, then you have a legitimate shot at winning this challenge.
Yeah. And they get the sixth one wrong as well and ring Davy and Hans to help on the seventh. And Davy essentially tells him to piss off and leave him alone.
Yeah. I'm driving. I'm on the highway.
And somehow they guess that the Afrikaans for tracksuit is sweatsuit.
Luck played a big part in their success because it certainly wasn't too much skill.
Now, all of the skill seemed to be on the Hans and Davy side rather than the everyone else side.
I will say that Robin and Davy did have the best communication of anybody in this challenge.
Yeah, but that's a very low bar.
It is, but I mean, it did contribute to them winning, though.
Yeah, it took them until their third visit to the library to work out that maybe you should just give us important words and we do the work while you get electric shocked.
Yeah, because they weren't able to get too much information in the 3-minute intervals. It seems like they wasted just staring at the dictionaries, which if you're the mole, that's what you really want. You want to be in the bigger group. And plus you're at the flow of information, too.
And they get back in the library and manage to finally rule out a GPS, which is the Croatian one. And the eighth word is laptop. They are correct with scoot computer. And Davy and Hans ask for the word for airports, but it's a bit too late, so Davy eventually asks for left, right, and straight on. So after 8 questions, they get the correct approach. The ninth word is lift, and they choose raised container, which is correct. And with 45 minutes left, Davy and Hans have 7 GPSs, and the others have just 1 word left. The final word is incubator. They choose small incubator and are wrong. It was baby incubator, and they have no more access to the library. And I have to say, I'm assuming there were some off-air rules for this one. I'm assuming that Davy and Hans couldn't turn back on a GPS that they'd already turned off.
Yeah, I think they made that clear.
Yeah, and I'm also assuming that they couldn't have a look at the settings of the GPS other than turning it off.
Change the language.
Now, what I would have done, if it was me, was I would have, on most GPSs, you can have a look at what the upcoming route is. So I would have then seen what the upcoming directions were and asked for the specific words for, like, straight ahead then, if I knew there was a straight ahead coming up on that GPS.
Oh, that makes sense.
I'm assuming they weren't allowed to do that.
Maybe they could have, and they just didn't figure it out. Because just think of how likely they were going to fail with their current strategy. Like, they just got really, really, really lucky.
Yeah, the other thing I probably would have done if there were no rules was turn the volume off on maybe 1 or 2, just to make it clearer.
You have a feeling the volume had to be set in stone.
Yeah, because if you turn the volume off on all but one of them, then you can probably work out what language it is.
Yeah, then that's when it's like, and you can see the route coming up, so it's like you only need that one specific word.
So yeah, they turn off every GPS that takes longer than half an hour because that's all they've got left, and there are only 2 left. They recognise the Danish one and turn off 1 of the GPSs, leaving just 1 to follow. Davy tells Robin to stop driving him around like a maniac in Leighton Park. Brilliant communication, guys. They pull up, and somehow it's correct, earning them €1,500 of a possible €3,000 for the pot. And I have to say, I don't remember them winning this challenge.
I do, because I remember how shocked I was when I originally watched it when Davy and Hans walk in. Because I remember it was one of the flukiest challenge wins of almost any mole challenge ever.
I honestly had it into my head when I was watching this a couple of days ago that they really crash and burn on this challenge and go to the completely wrong place.
No, they just get really, really, really lucky. And it makes them all be like, how? I should have... That should have been a successful sabotage hot for Dama.
To quote John Mulaney from the Salt and Pepper Diner, God damn it! So Gilles walks in and congratulates them and tells them it's time they went and met their families again. And Sam admits in the car that they only won because of dumb luck.
Yeah, he didn't even want to pretend that it was because of skill. If anything, the loved one should be substituting for the contestants and they could probably do better at the challenges overall.
And they drive up to the middle of nowhere to see their loved ones in a cage. And Annelise spots her husband very quickly. And Gilles says to greet their loved ones, they have to cross the minefield behind him. If they freed their loved ones, they'll earn €3,000 for the pot. And between them and the cage are 10 multiple choice questions. Under each wrong one is a mine. And if they stop off a mine, then a bomb will go off behind their loved ones. And for the first 6 questions, the loved ones get to assign who answers. The first category is sports, and they choose Robin. And he is asked which Belgian cyclist was the winner, in inverted commas, of Three Lanterns Rouge at the Tour de France.
I like how it's how I've never heard of Red Lanterns before, and then it's referenced in back-to-back episodes.
Oh yeah, it's a known thing, the Lantern Rouge.
In Europe.
Yeah, in Europe. Obviously, Belgium is nearly as big into their cycling as like the Dutch and the French. Belgium is quite successful when it comes to road cycling, especially. So I'm not entirely surprised that there was a cycling question in this.
I assume for Robin it was a really easy one.
Yeah, I would assume so, because we get the impression that Robin is quite into his cycling from last episode especially as well. I think it's basically him and Davey who are the big cyclists.
So who gets the Green Lantern?
The Green Lantern is the ring awarded to one random cyclist who completes the Tour de France.
And it's a Canadian who gets it, right?
Yeah, it allows them to put their skin suit on without having to do anything. It's technology.
Maybe that'll be in the next mole season. They'll have, instead of a red lantern that they'll have to guide through to a campsite, it'll be a green lantern. You know, they got to keep talking themselves, right?
And it'll all be CGI.
I don't know how the fans are going to feel about it, though.
Well, surely it'll just get referenced in a film 10 years later with the same lead actor taking the piss out of it.
Yeah, very self-deprecating.
As long as it's not green. So the second category is Flora and Fauna, both of whom are in My Animal Crossing Village. They choose Hans because he had a botany book at university, and he's asked which of the three butterflies aren't real, either lemon, mango, or strawberry butterfly.
I have no clue.
It's a crapshoot, isn't it?
Whoever answers this question should not step off.
And Hans ended up being right, that's the thing.
Well, he had a botany book.
He ended up stumbling arse backwards into a correct answer again.
He didn't even have to turn off the GPS.
The third category is music. Sam is volunteered and asked which of the three options played at Woodstock, you know, in 1969, about at least 20 years before Sam was born.
Maybe 30 years.
Sam was, what, 92, 93, I think he was born. I think he's 24, isn't he?
So he's like a year younger than me.
So he's actually the year between the two of us. So, being honest, he was born in 1992. He was not going to know off the top of his head who played at Woodstock, I would guess. But he gets it right, inexplicably.
Yeah, that's who I would have guessed.
I mean, I would have guessed the Who, but I wouldn't have been confident.
Not like 100% sure, but it's like, yeah, like I've, especially with my dad really into like reading about Woodstock and stuff, I know a good chunk of the performers there. And like, I'm pretty sure the Who was more recent.
The fourth category is architecture. They pick Annalise, and she is not happy about it. And she is asked which of three buildings is the highest, either Notre Dame, Big Ben, or the Atomium. And of course, as you well know, they weren't allowed to put pictures of any of these up because you can't take a photograph of the Atomium.
Such a weird law.
Ah, Belgium, never change. And I do also have to say, I know I'm being a pedant, but Big Ben is not the building. The Elizabeth Tower is the building. Big Ben is the bell. If anyone picks Big Ben, then Big Ben is not that big because it's not a building, it's a bell. In fact, up until a couple of years ago, it was just merely the clock tower at the Houses of Parliament. They renamed it in 2012 to commemorate the Queen's Diamond Jubilee to the Elizabeth Tower.
Either way, she gets it wrong.
Yeah, either way, you don't pick that, and it's wrong.
Which one? She picked Notre... Didn't she pick the Notre...
She picked Notre Dame, even though currently it's not that high. But yeah, the Atomium's the obvious answer to that one, I would say.
Yeah, because I was thinking, I've been to all three of those. Yes, I did go to all three of those on the same Europe trip. And the Notre Dame is not that tall. It's like the size of a regular, you know, big city cathedral.
Yeah, no, Notre Dame is much smaller than you would expect. The Elizabeth Tower is much smaller than you would expect. And the Atomium, I've never been to Brussels, but the Atomium, I would know pretty much off the top of my head, was probably going to be larger than both of those.
The Atomium is substantial.
The Atomium is at least a landmark where they can have an amazing race pit stop and weirdly sleep inside it.
Yeah.
And the fifth category is science, and they curse themselves because Hans is a science teacher. They choose Aline, and she's asked which two Nobel Prizes Marie Curie won. And this is the easiest of all of the trivia questions.
Yes. It's not going to be literature, and we know one of them has to be chemistry.
Yeah, Marie Curie, quite famous for chemistry, even more famous for physics. Hence the fact that curium is on the periodic table. So that's a pretty easy question, I would say.
And yet they still fight about, because they're like, well, maybe she wrote a book about radium.
No, she didn't.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure literature is for actually, isn't it usually just for stories? I don't think it's not like...
It's not for nonfiction books.
It's like you have The Great Gatsby, To Kill a Mockingbird, and All About Radium.
You have The Great Gatsby, To Kill a Mockingbird, and Radium Explanation Point by Marie Curie. The kids' book all about nuclear physics.
Yes, you have like Lord of the Flies, The Giver, all of these, War and Peace, Crime and Punishment, and then Radium.
I mean, I must say, I have so many books by Marie Curie on my Kindle at the moment. I just can't move for books from Marie Curie about radium. It's really weird.
But maybe there's like a radium story with Curious George or something.
But the thing is, of all the elements to pick, I wouldn't pick radium to be associated with them particularly. I would probably pick curium, the one named after them.
But I like how that's like a serious conversation for them. Like, maybe she wrote a brilliant novel about radium, even though that's not the thing, that's not the element named after her.
I mean, her books got a little bit samey when every single villain just used nuclear physics to kill people, but more power to her if she can keep writing that series of books. I mean, the twist did get a bit stale after the fourth or fifth time that a supervillain just used radium to kill people.
Yes, a book with supervillains and stuff was always up for Nobel Literature Prize back in the 19th century.
Did you know that she wrote a James Bond book?
On Her Majesty's Radium.
No, radium finger, obviously. Whoever he touches just gets.
I was going to say Dr. Radium was going to be my next guest.
Can you tell we're sleep deprived?
Gold Radium.
No, it's obviously given the theming of Goldfinger, it would be Radium Finger.
The spy who radiumed me from Russia with radium.
It's more from Russia with Novichok, isn't it? So Davy is left over and has a question on art, and he's asked who painted Déjeuner sur l'Herbe out of Degas, Monet or Manet. For the final four questions, the contestants can decide who answers, but they have to choose someone who's on a right answer or the bomb will explode when they step off.
I must say, out of all six of them, the painting one and the butterfly ones would immediately be the two where it's like, okay, those two questions, nobody steps off. Like, I had no clue on the painting one.
No, neither did I. But I'm not big on my art, so.
And then, what was the seventh question? That was, they made Sam answer it?
That was how old Juliet from Romeo and Juliet was when she died. Which is actually not a difficult question, I would say.
Is it 15?
13.
It was 13, yeah. Because in my head, I'm like, I think she was 14, and then 13 and 15 were the options. I'm like, well, it's going to be one of those two.
I think the answers were wrong on this. I think she was 14 as well. Because 14 was what I had written down originally. Because
yeah.
I think she was 14 and Romeo was 17, if I'm not mistaken.
Let's Google this.
I'm pretty sure on that, actually, that she was 14.
No, they say 13. Maybe she celebrated her 14th birthday during the play.
I always had in my head when I studied Romeo and Juliet, she was 14.
Yeah, it's weird how we both thought of the same wrong number.
But yeah, she was ridiculously young anyway.
But yeah, you think of Shakespeare times when people typically got married, and it's like, really? You're going to pick 17?
Yeah, she obviously was not 17. 17 was the obvious, really wrong answer. There was an argument for 15, but given those choices, I would have erred on the side of she was young, so I would have gone 13, even before I knew that was her answer.
Yeah, and I'm like, maybe 15, but I definitely would have known that 17 was wrong.
You can be forgiven for saying 15, you can't be forgiven for saying 17.
It's like, okay, Sam has not read Romeo and Juliet. Well, he said he only saw the film. Like, that's not really a detail in the film. They don't say, "Hello, Romeo, you 13 or 14-year-old. This is Juliet from the House of Capulet. She is 13 years old."
But even then, Leo is really young in that film. You'd probably err on the side of Claire Danes being younger than him. I think if Sam is likely to have seen any of them, it would have been the one with Leo and Claire Danes.
Just like with Othello, like, he's going to be like, "What? What job was Othello? Wasn't he a high school kid who played sports and he played basketball?" It's like, no, that would be, "Oh, Sam, you are really, really young." And then Sam's like, "Yeah, that's Othello. That's the play where they have the Outcast song playing during that one scene, isn't it?"
But yeah, the argument I'm making is that even in the film, you can tell that Leo is meant to be much older than Claire Danes. If you roughly know that Leo was pretty young in that film and he was supposed to be about 17, you go, "She was far younger than him. Go 13. I love how we're just, like, intensely discussing the Romeo and Juliet question of all of them.
Romeo was 16 in the play. He was 16.
Was he? I thought he was 17. The argument still stands. She's much younger than him.
So this would be an illegal relationship by today's standards.
Yeah, but most relationships of that time probably would.
Yeah.
So the next category is philosophy, and they volunteer Davy. He was wrong that Monet painted Déjeuner sur l'Herbe. A smoke bomb goes off. It was Manet. And we see a close-up of Davy's diarrhea colored Converse before he steps off. Sam's second answer was wrong. He said 17 and it was 13. And Annalise was wrong that Notre Dame was the tallest. It was the Atomium. They could have won with the other three who were all right, but they didn't. So they earned 0 out of 3,000 euros for the challenge. And I have to say, the loved ones were very lucky that it's not any other season, because they would have got paint bombed in any other season.
Yeah.
This is the only season that does not feature a paint bomb.
Maybe after the whole gender reveal party thing with that fire starting, that they just thought, smoke bomb is good enough.
That's why they're in the middle of nowhere. It's just in case they start a forest fire in California.
Yeah.
So everyone greets each other finally, and Robin says to his wife that both his suspects went home, so he's got no idea who it is. And then they all have dinner together, thankfully without shit wine this time, thank you Bruno, and actually talk. And apparently Sam felt guilty that he asked how his dog was when he rang first, rather than his family. There is so much of this bit of the episode that I completely have forgotten. Like, I completely forgot that they stayed on basically a safari ranch. I completely forgot there was a warthog that Annalise ended up mothering.
It's going to replace Hans as a contestant by the next episode. I think the warthog was more well-liked than Hans.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think most people would have preferred that. But the thing is, you don't realise how actually quite adorable warthogs are, because they are. They're very cute in real life. You just think of Pumbaa off of The Lion King and go, yeah, they're a bit ugly, but warthogs are actually pretty cute.
I wish we had them in Canada.
They're very tasty as well. So after breakfast, they leave for their next challenge. Before that, though, the loved ones are asked the traditional question of whether their candidate could be the mole. And literally everyone apart from Annalise gets a no. Annalise gets a, potentially she can lie. And Gilles meets them all in the middle of a forest, and they are all wearing protective gear. And they're going to take part in a version of the Hunger Games, just to date this episode. If you are shot, you are out, just like in the real Hunger Games. And they can earn 5,000 euros for the group and an exemption in this challenge. At some point during the hour, the money will be dropped. To win it, whoever picks it up must also be the only person left standing. And each pair gets a gun and a shield. Only the contestant can shoot.
Paintball gun.
Yeah, this isn't the real Hunger Games where they actually have tridents and shit. This is just a paintball gun. And the last person standing wins an exemption, regardless of the result of the challenge. And during the challenge, new rules will be announced over the conveniently placed tannoy.
They needed to have funnier rules during the challenge.
Something I did forget to mention, by the way, is they actually announced that day 12 started in Hartenbos, and I've worked out the game reserve they stayed at, because I'm me.
Was it a nice one?
It looked very nice. It was the Gondwana game reserve, by the look of things. The huts look the same from the pictures that I saw. It looks very nice.
Is it in the northern part of the country, or still no, southern?
It's the entire season is basically in the Western Cape. It's just north of George.
Hmm.
They didn't actually have to travel that far for it. But yeah, the new rules.
Like, one of my rules would be like, okay, you have to speak in pig Latin for the remainder of the challenge if you communicate with your partner.
or even better, you have to speak at the top of your voice if you communicate with your partner.
You are no longer allowed in Zone C.
You're not allowed to do anything to do with an indoor voice.
There's actually no exemption play. It's just going to be half of a yoker.
Two halves of a yoker have been dropped at Zones A and C. You must combine them to make them into a real one. Also, it's deeply ironic that this challenge happens, given that this is essentially just a version of the ill-fated CW show Capture, which someone from Amazing Race 32 is on.
Odd coincidence.
But given that it's September for us that we're recording this, we'll talk about that next month, because I have some things to say about him. So, Aline almost immediately shoots Joe, and the rest hide in the woods. Each pair have 15 paintballs, and during the game, more paintballs will be dropped at the zones on their map. Sam shoots Annalise after just 2 minutes, and she is out.
I like how she only lasted, like, a minute and 50 seconds longer than her husband.
I like how the first two people that you think are probably going to get eliminated in a paintball challenge get eliminated straight away.
Yeah, it's too bad that Annalise couldn't put on like a Rambo bandana and just steamroll her way through this challenge.
So Hans and Corrine arrive at drop point A and decide to hide there. Aline and Max are at drop point C. Aline sees Sam and his mum, but she only has four paintballs left. She still hits him though, leaving four pairs left as loved ones are not allowed to be on the course alone. And 1 minute later, 15 paintballs will be dropped at Zone B, and Sophie picks them up for Robin. After 15 minutes, another 15 paintballs will be dropped at Drop Zone A. Hans picks them up. Sophie sees Hans kind of stumbling along, and shootout begins, but they just end up wasting a lot of paintballs between them.
Yeah. It's like one of those Leslie Nielsen shootouts in the movie where they keep firing at each other from like 2 feet apart, but they miss the whole time.
And Aline is by drop zone C, but has no paintballs, and she comes up with a plan to hide behind a tree and pretend she has some, because it still makes the gas noise if it's firing nothing. And 1 minute later, €5,000 gets dropped on the start podium. Davey runs for it. If he is the last man standing, they'll earn €5,000. If anyone else survives or he gets shot, they earn nothing. And they decide to just run straight back to the podium and try and sit there for the exemption. And Hans basically wastes all of his paintball shooting at him.
They're not conservative with their paintballs in this challenge.
No, if you get a limited amount of paintballs, you don't shoot someone unless you're really nearby or they're shooting you. That's the rule, surely.
It's like Bender from Futurama with a machine gun, where he just goes through like 100 bullets of the machine gun when they do the, like their Hunger Games episode in Futurama. Oh yeah, that's when they have to fight the people from Star Trek. And he finds a machine gun and 100 bullets and he just fires all 100 for fun. That's what this challenge is like. In other words, it's another challenge where the contestants don't plan at all.
And Jill announces with 22 minutes to go that if there is more than one survivor, every extra person on the course will cost €500 from the pot, including the loved ones. Which is essentially just, you need to shoot your loved ones, the rule.
The loved ones can't get the exemption?
Well, the loved ones can't be on the course alone. That's already been established.
Yeah.
So Robin spots Aline and Maxime, but Maxime defends her and gets shot himself. He has no paintballs left as a result, and Jill announces that another 15 paintballs will be landing at Zone C. Aline claims them, not that Robin knows that. She tries to shoot him, but it's too far away, and Davey gets involved and aims at him too. And Aline and Hans both have just one paintball left. Jill announces whoever is on the podium at the end of time wins the exemption regardless of how many people are left. With 5 minutes left, there are 7 people still alive.
Finally got the moss.
I'm proud of you, son. Don't worry, I'm just talking amongst myself while I hear you banging around your room trying to kill a moth. And Hans says he has no chance to win, but if he's alive, he'll cost the pot money.
What fucking strategy is that?
Like, of all the stupid strategies we have seen on this show, Hans just hiding in the middle of the forest and costing the pot €6,000. And then not even being the mole is a ridiculous strategy.
There's Mark going straight ticket on the first two quizzes. And then hands down, what has to be right up there is Hans hanging out in the woods for reasons that the contestants themselves just could not figure out at the end of the challenge, especially Robin.
Yeah, if you cast your mind back to Argentina, Jill as mole cost the group 6,000 euros in the Passfragen game. Hans, as contestant and as someone who no one suspects, cost the pot the same amount of money by just being a bit pig-headed in this challenge.
Like, I don't even know if Hans really knew what he was doing in that challenge. Was he trying to draw suspicion?
I think he just didn't think.
He did say that he didn't think going into the quiz, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he just genuinely didn't consider that if he was still alive, they wouldn't earn the 5,000 euros.
But what was he thinking was going to happen if he hung out in the woods till time ran out?
Well, exactly. And the thing is, if you have no paintballs left, which he didn't, and if you know there is one other survivor there, which is Davy, who has paintballs and is going to claim the exemption, you can't win the exemption anyway, so you might as well just take one for the team.
Which is what Aline, at least, like, that's essentially what Aline and Robin did as well. We each only have, like, one or two paintballs. Let's just go for the exemption. If not, we're out in the open and Davy can shoot us and we add money to the pot.
Like, I know that being shot by a paintball is not the thing that is going to enthuse you the most, but given Hans has been basically a team player the entire season that he's been in, to the point of, in the Bertrand non-elimination, he said, just do the honourable thing and admit it, I would. Like, it's so out of character for Hans to just go, I just don't want to get shot. I don't want a paintball in my face. I don't want my girlfriend to get a paintball in her face. I'm just going to sit here in the woods and cost the group 6,000 euros. Because that's essentially what his attitude was.
I'm trying to replay through all the other Belgian Mole seasons now that we're only like three episodes away from covering every episode ever of Belgian Mole.
Well, the good ones.
Yeah. And I'm just generally trying to think, like, has there been another move or strategy in another challenge where it's just, it didn't make sense to the contestants and it didn't make sense to the contestant who did it himself?
I don't think so.
Because that's the one thing I remember about this, the major thing. Like, I remember once the GPS part of the challenge refreshed my memory, I'm like, oh yeah, somehow they win this, but I forget how. But with the Hunger Games one, the one thing I always remember is just Hans camping out in the woods. And it's even worse than I remembered, because I'm like, oh right, there is like zero. That's why it stayed in my brain, is because people spent the next 3 or 4 weeks trying to figure out why he did it.
I think of all the paintball challenges as well, this is probably my favorite one. It's the best thematically, I would say. It's either this one or the Mexican Shootout. I have a soft spot for the Mexican Shootout just because it's ridiculous and steals money from charity, which is really funny.
It's just, yeah, I'm just trying to, like, and why didn't Hans's girlfriend step in and say, I want 6,000 euros if you win this game. I think you should go get shot by Davy.
Especially when she lost him 3,000 euros last week.
She's the mole. She's lost them. She's lost Hans 9,000 euros.
Nearly a tenth of the potential pot this season is lost purely by Hans.
Hans's loved one. I guess his girlfriend just brings bad juju onto Belgian Mole.
So Aline aims her last paintball at Davy with 90 seconds to go. Robin also runs to the platform despite having no paintballs left. And Robin gets shot. So does Aline. And in my favourite move, Davy just turns around to Margo and goes, yeah, you know you're going to cost money as well. I'm shooting you. Bye.
Imagine if Robin was able to run through the field somehow. Like, this is the only way Robin gets the exemption. He runs through the field, grabs Davy's paintball gun with his girlfriend there, grabs the paintball gun, shoots Davy and his girlfriend, or I guess just Davy, and then snags the exemption and does it all in under a minute somehow. That's the
What would have happened if everyone had run out of paintballs and Robin steps on the platform as well?
Well, he'd still be in the game, right?
Yeah, but both of them would get an exemption, surely, because it's whoever's on the platform. Would both get the exemption? Would one of them?
I'd assume that there was an unannounced rule that only one could get it.
So yeah, Hans and Corinne end up costing the pot 6,000 euros by still being alive. Davy earns the exemption and is delivered it by drone. That earns them minus 1,000 euros of possible 5,000 for the challenge. €500 of a possible 11,000 for the episode, and €19,000 of a possible 66,000 for the season so far.
It's the biggest sabotage of the whole season, I think, was the €6,000 that Hans cost the pot.
And it's not even done by the mole.
No. As we clearly determined, it was not a mole sabotage. And I think if people were like 95% sure Hans wasn't the mole going into this challenge, I think they 100% ruled him out just because it was the most puzzling, blatant sabotage ever.
Exactly. The mole is meant to be found by the end of the season, but the mole is not meant to sit in the woods and cost the group €6,000.
And he just gets grilled for it afterwards, where everyone's like, why? We could have had €5,000 in the pot, easy. Like, even the mole wasn't just found a way to get themselves shot.
So that evening, they have their final meal with their loved ones. Sam apparently still tells his mum when he goes to the bathroom. And after dinner, they all have to say goodbye, and Robin cries. And it's now time for the test. 20 questions on the identity and actions of the mole. Whoever knows least goes home, except for the mole who can never go home. Also, Davey's got an exemption, so he can't go home either.
Not that he would have anyway.
Sam says that Davey and Hans were suspicious for not giving much information from the car. Annalise says that Robin was a bit overbearing at the electric challenge. Robin says that some very strange decisions were made at the paintball challenge, like Hans just hiding in the woods. Eileen says that Annalise was so sure about Monet painting Déjeuner sur l'herbe, but Davey was quick to step down too, so they're both suspicious. Hans says he's not sure if Corinne helped him. He told her who his mole is, but she told him to keep an open mind, and he's gambling on one person. And Robin says that today will be the least gutting elimination because everyone's had a bit of love from home.
It really is the least gut-wrenching elimination, considering we get no reaction. We get a deep exhale from Davey.
Even though he was the one person who could, well, one of two people who could be pretty confident that they weren't going home.
Yeah.
So Sam and Annalise get green screens before Hans actually sees a red one this time and goes home. And he says he took a huge risk going for one person today, and everyone eulogizes him and just says that he was a good dude.
He was calm, he played for the group most of the time. And that's it. That's it for the final words. It's like the least impactful final words of any contestant was, yeah, he was a good, calm guy. He was positive. And they all said it, like three different people said more or less like the same 10 words. And then Hans himself didn't even really react to it. He's like, oh, yeah, I guess, yeah, I scored the lowest. Those are the rules of the game.
So next week, everyone's heart rate is raised by a challenge with baggage before they try and get a good night's sleep in my least favorite challenge of the season, just warning you now, and skip in a hotel room before everyone is locked up with the mole.
Oh, it's the sleep challenge that producers never attempt again.
The sleep challenge is the one challenge I would say that I detest in this season. It's the one challenge that I think is an absolute stinker of a challenge. Because it's not visually appealing for us. It's not very fun for the candidates. It's just a rare misstep for this season.
It was a creative challenge, though.
Yeah, it was a creative challenge.
It was worth a shot.
And I've not rewatched it yet, so my opinion may change on this. But I remember it being a real stinker of a challenge.
Because they don't succeed any remotely.
And it's a bit of a gut-wrenching elimination next week as well.
Well, I mean, in contrast to Hans.
But I will say there are two really good challenges next episode. It's just the sleep one isn't one of them. So, anything else to say, Mr. Saunders?
Hans, why were you in the woods? He would still be out in the woods if there wasn't an expiration date on the challenge.
What they should have done is just left him there. Just not told him the challenge was over and just let him become the woodsman of the South African forests. Putting the boss into heart and boss.
He's waiting for the next paintballs to be delivered, next set of paintballs to be delivered by drone.
So, thank you for listening to our Ardy Mole Belgium recap. We'll be back next week to continue the hunt for the mole in South Africa. Don't forget you can contact us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube or Instagram where we are TV Warriors. Or you can email us at contact@rtvwarriors.com. Logan is on Twitter at LogSuperQuacky and I'm MJ Harmstone. See you next week.
Peace out and just chill till the next flavoring.
And now we can talk about what the mole did, because there isn't much this time. So the main thing I remember Elaine doing is deliberately getting electric shocks. She basically says in the reunion, I didn't want to get electric shocks, but I had to take one for the team as the mole. And just make sure that we kept getting electric shots.
And then have that sabotage still fail anyway.
Yeah. And she also didn't shoot anyone, really. She tried, or alleged to try, to shoot people, but she didn't shoot anyone, which increased the chance of people being left over, and therefore costing the pot all the money.
But she kind of gets overshadowed with Hans doing her work for her.
It's a very low-key mole episode, this one.
Yeah. And they only earned 500 euros total anyway.
Well, yeah.